Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Recruiting Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined by High Point head coach John Torpy, and we are talking about September 1st, the first moment in which NCAA coaches are able to legally contact members of the class of 2019. Very rare circumstance for the sport of lacrosse, given that this is a result of recruiting legislation that was put in place in April. And as a result, many members of the 2019 class are already committed. By some count, in the hundreds of players are already committed, meaning that, you know, they're probably roughly 50% of the spots available. So we want to get Coach Torpy's sense of how his staff is going to approach September 1st, next Friday, in terms of their initial contact. So, Coach, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Terry.
So what would you say is the Panthers staff approach to their initial outreach for the class of 2019 on Friday?
Well, for us, we always operate kind of on our own timeline. And I think there's going to be a couple guys that we reach out to that we feel, you know, are maybe guys that we're ready to make a decision on. But it's only going to be a handful of guys. We've got six guys committed in that class already. From before the rules were put in place that we feel really good about. That class will probably be about, you know, 15 to 18 guys for us. I think that's kind of the norm with programs like ours. You're starting to see a little bit bigger numbers. And, you know, I think between, you know, the guys that we've evaluated this summer and the guys that we've evaluated through past spring, I think there's probably going to be, like I said, a handful of guys that we call and have communications with, but I don't even necessarily know if those are going to be offers. It's probably going to be come down to campus, see the school, let us get an opportunity to meet you in person and kind of go from there. But I don't think it's going to be a huge wave of guys. We're pretty much going to continue to operate on the same path that we've operated in years past, which is, you know, get a couple guys early and then kind of wait and see what happens late, be patient and find those guys that we might not have, you know, that might have been maybe passed by some other programs or some guys that are, you know, more so just normal bloomers, guys that are, you know, going to develop more as a late junior or a senior.
What's your approach going to be for the guys that have been committed that you haven't been able to communicate with since April?
Just reach out to those guys and just kind of see what's happening and what's going on with those guys with school and with lacrosse. And if any of those guys, we have a couple of them playing fall sports, just check up and see how they're doing. I think we'll probably end up giving those guys a phone call on the first at some point in either the morning or the afternoon, probably the afternoon after they get out of school. But again, like nothing too formal.
Do you think you're going to do any of that Midnight Madness stuff as far as staying up until 11:59 on Thursday night and hitting the speed dial as soon as the clock ticks?
Well, we are a morning practice team, so I'm usually in bed by around 9:30. So I probably won't be doing that. Might send out a couple time-delayed emails, but I won't be making any phone calls at midnight.
So as you kind of pull back the lens a little bit on what this summer, and particularly the class of 2019 this summer, operated like relative to the rising junior summer years prior, how would you say this year was different? What stood out?
I don't think anything changed from an evaluation standpoint. We went out on the road. We wanted to identify some of the better guys in that class with all the camps that we were able to attend. And again, being able to get on the road through the spring too and identify some of these guys through high school events. But some of the communication, obviously the change, obviously not being able to have contact with them directly, maybe not reaching out as much to coaches about guys in the 19 class. I think that was obviously a big change, but it's still, you know, you still have a pretty good idea of the guys that are going to be good fits for your program, both academically, socially, lacrosse wise, maybe some guys in the past that, you know, you have a good rapport with their coaches. So you still have, you know, some communication with individuals, I think coaching wise, that are in charge of these guys, club wise, high school wise, but obviously the communications with the kids ceased. Communication amongst our staff stayed the same. I mean, we were talking about 19s the entire summer. We're following guys that we thought were guys that we would, you know, want to take a step forward and continue to evaluate or make offers to. But, you know, not a whole heck of a lot changed. I mean, just obviously the direct communication piece was the biggest piece.
So in terms of the way that your staff operates, sounds like it's relatively business as usual, although maybe some of the decisions or some of the conversations are going to be a little bit condensed here, where they might have been protracted over the course of the, you know, last several months. But what's your sense of the way that your colleagues are operating? Have you heard of anybody that's, you know, planning to do something starkly different, or how surprised would you be if something were to emerge on Friday that suggested that a coach was operating in a way that was starkly different from how he had operated in the past?
I don't know if you're going to see a whole lot of change this year. You might see change in, you know, some future years to come, but I think, you know, what happened is a lot of guys were in communications with 19s before the rules were put in place. So I wouldn't be surprised if you saw a lot of guys verbally commit on that first day of September. I think maybe, you know, some of the things that, you know, might be a little unique and, you know, just like you said, the 12 o'clock midnight phone calls would be interesting to see, you know, who goes that route. I think the other thing is just how many guys are going to reach out to guys that are already verbally committed. You know, just in talking to some guys, I think that's going to be something that probably happens, you know, and obviously a little bit more of an influx on one day than, you know, maybe what it's been in years past. I think a lot of guys that have already committed to schools are going to get a lot of phone calls from coaches, just with the way the current, you know, recruiting cycle works with some of that stuff. But I think we'll probably have a better idea in years to come. I don't know if there's going to be a whole heck of a lot that changes this year.
So just asking for a little bit of advice for two specific pools of 2019 players. So you mentioned that a lot of guys are still uncommitted, but probably had some communication with coaches prior to the rule changes. And as a result, know that there exists some interest in them. Obviously, it's a little bit of a difficult situation because everyone's is so unique and specialized, but would you give any general advice to a kid in that candidate pool for how to navigate Friday?
Not really. I mean, it's hard. I think if you sat down 5-7 years ago and you could go to a talk really from any college coach and understand what the recruiting cycle is and how it works, but I think you look at, you know, where we are today with recruiting, so much has changed. And you've got, you know, guys that are verbally committed that are continuing to be recruited by schools. You've got guys that are making decisions on where they're going. You know, we'll be as early as September 1st. There's kids in the 2021 class that are already committed. You've got, you know, guys that are waiting till their senior year to make decisions. It's really hard to put, you know, at least for me, it's hard to put my finger on just how this process works. So I think it's unique to every school. I think it's unique to every individual. And I'll just tell you, I mean, it's the simplicity of it all is if you're a high school kid out there, just keep working on your game, keep doing the things you have to do to you know, continue to improve and get better every day. And just know that there's going to be opportunities out there for you. I know for us, you know, some of the guys that have been the most impactful freshmen for us the last couple of years have been guys that we have had commit to our program very late in the process. And I'm not talking about, you know, fall of your senior year, but I'm talking about spring of their senior year. And, you know, for a program like ours, we're kind of always on the lookout for guys that are going to be impactful players in our program. So I'd love to be able to say there's a cut and dry way with recruiting these days. And, you know, you can follow this timeline and you'll kind of know where you are at that point, but it's not. So, and, you know, I think to a certain degree that benefits a program like ours.
So then I guess a similar question, realizing how difficult it is to answer that, but I'll ask this one a little bit more directly and pointedly. If you were a 2019 who didn't have any interest with coach or didn't have any conversations with coaches prior to the rule changes, but have a sense that there were guys on the sidelines watching you, maybe you heard some sort of whispers from your club director, any advice for how to handle that Friday where, you know, would you even say like stay up until midnight and take the phone call if it comes, or, you know, be ready to answer an email on Friday morning? Is there anything about that you think is important, or do you think that it's all just kind of a bunch of hullabaloo in terms of the, you know, first moments, and if you're good enough, it's going to play itself out over the course of the subsequent months?
I think if you're good enough, it's going to play itself out, but I would suggest to kids on that September 1st date, you know, if you don't hear from somebody, don't take it too personally. There's going to be schools that do things differently. Some are going to be more aggressive. Some are going to be more laid back. But I think it's always good to hear for a high school kid or kid who's playing club lacrosse at a high level, you know, reach out to coaches and have a conversation with them. You know, whether you want to, you know, send them a text, send them an email, have your coach send them an email, open dialogue. Because for us, I mean, listen, there's kids that we saw play, you know, in high school championships and conference championships games in the spring that might be, you know, May 15th that we saw a kid play. And, you know, you might not have remembered that guy, or for some reason he might not be, you know, at the forefront of your brain in terms of the guys that you're looking at. But, you know, if you had a little bit of communication with him, or you had, you know, communication, you know, with before the recruiting cycle ended up, you know, changing, you might want to just jump back in and have a conversation, send the coach an email and just, you know, see if there's any interest there. And I think what most coaches are going to do that they kind of operate on more of a, I guess, kind of be patient and see what happens timeline is, they're going to probably have that initial conversation with you, maybe invite you to a prospect camp, try to get you back down to campus and kind of go from there. But I mean, one of the best pieces of advice I can give a kid, you know, on that September 1st date of 2019 is just don't panic. I mean, you're going to have opportunities and you know, there's, you know, no need to get frustrated if you don't get that call, but just keep working, keep doing what you're doing, and just try to keep an open dialogue and stay in touch with coaches.
So glad to hear you say that. Incredible advice from a guy who's seen it from all sides. One other aspect of this conversation that is very easy to gloss over is that, you know, the context of all this initial communication with 2019s is happening while active recruitment is still going on with members of the class of 2018. So how would you characterize the status of that as far as coming through this August dead period, getting fired back up and realizing that we're about 85 days or so from the early signing period?
Yeah. I mean, with our 18 class, even with those guys, we're still talking to guys in that class. And I think a lot of schools are, and, you know, you've seen this kind of trend in Division I lacrosse over the last couple of years of, you know, guys on current rosters being, you know, recruited by other schools or having third party communication with other schools. And, you know, you see a lot of guys that, you know, kind of have to adjust what they do even with their current players. So with the 18s, you always kind of have to have that secondary list so that if a kid, you know, at the 11th hour gets called by somebody because somebody else takes somebody else's guy, you've got another guy there, you know, ready to take that guy's spot. And again, I'd love to say that doesn't happen. I'd love to, you know, say that the recruiting cycle is what it was 6 or 7 years ago, but unfortunately it's changed. And, you know, you as a coach and at the Division I level have got to be prepared for anything. And you as a student athlete, you know, interested in playing Division I lacrosse who might not have that offer yet or has that offer, you've got to be ready for anything to happen. So, it's dramatically changed. So yeah, for our 18s, you know, we're prepping our guys right now to, you know, get all their information in with admissions and be ready to go and, you know, take care of everything they need to get to from an admissions standpoint and, you know, NLI and commitment letter standpoint. But, you know, we've also got some 18s that we've had conversations with and that are like, hey, listen, you know, we might not have anything now, but just sit tight because, you know, things can change at any given time.
Well, Coach Torpin, we really appreciate the insight into the recruiting process. You mentioned that you were an early morning practice team in the fall, which means and suggests that your boys are back on campus. What's it looking like?
It's good. Really good vibe right now. Been really impressed with our older guys and the way they lead both on and off the field. And great group of young guys. It's been a lot of fun. New staff, you know, exciting and always great support from the school. So things are looking up and excited to see these guys. We don't actually start practice for a couple of weeks, but the guys are out there doing conditioning and getting some work in on their own.
Well, we really appreciate your joining us on the podcast. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks, Terry.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Nick Daniello, director of Primetime, a club based out of the northern side of the New York metro area. Nick, thank you so much for joining us. We are talking about September 1st and NCAA Division I coaches' first opportunity to talk to members of the class of 2019. Before we get started, how are you doing?
Thank you very much for having me, Terry. Things are great. How are you doing today?
Doing excellent. So I'm really fascinated by this topic because I think that in two ways, it's something that the sport has kind of never experienced before. But on the other hand, September 1st used to be a big deal in the way that coaches would approach contacting players for the first time. So just to set the table, in April, the NCAA instituted rules that eliminated contact between college Division I coaches and players who were not members of – who had not reached September 1st of their junior year of high school. And there were a lot – there was a lot of confusion around the implementation of those rules, whether or not third-party contact was allowed, et cetera. And there's a lot of conversation about the role of club directors in those conversations. My understanding and impression has been that, you know, coaches have been pretty faithful to the spirit of the rule. By and large, they have not tried to contact directly or indirectly members of the class of 2019. And as a result, they will begin to do so in earnest on September 1st. Is that your impression as well?
Yeah, so far everybody has been, I'd say, following the rules. I think a lot of coaches didn't expect the rule to pass. So I think they're kind of shocked about that it actually went through and kind of see what it means. I think every coach right now is kind of see from the standards of, you know, what their compliance department thinks of the rule. You know, some coaches have said to me that they are going to deal with just what their president of the school says and their compliance department. Others are saying they're going by the national bodies rule of lacrosse, the college coaches. I believe it's called the MCWA, what's it, the MCLA, I believe.
Yep, the IMLCA.
So I know Graham Levingston has sent out a bunch of communications trying to clarify it, but I really don't think anybody knows for sure, you know, what the true effect of this. I'd probably say until next year, I would say.
Right. So part of the dynamic as well is that a lot of players in this class have already committed. There are hundreds of commitments, and my estimation is that there's probably about half of the spots in Division I rosters left in the class of 2019, which means that there's still a lot of work to be done in terms of guys winnowing down their selections, using the evaluations that they created this summer, and starting conversations to figure out who's going to fill out their roster in this class. So what's your sense, having spoken to college coaches, about what the general approach is going to be to the first opportunity to contact players on Friday?
Well, I think it comes down to the level of school there is. You know, some of these schools have already finished their 2019 class. So I think with them, those guys are going to be reaching out to their guys just to make sure that they are still committed to them. Obviously, I have not been able to speak to them since April. It's been a long time. And as you've probably seen in the last couple of months, you know, the poaching trend and kids flipping is a very common practice. So I think it will be interesting to see that those guys are going to want to see if they still have those guys as those guys. Then I think the next phase for them will be, you know, these guys have now had, for the first time, they've had a whole summer to evaluate kids. In the past, coaches had made decisions off of kids based on seeing them play maybe for a period, you know, of 4 or 5 games and making a decision. Now they've had a whole summer and a full year to do their due diligence. I think schools will begin to reach out to the guys that they really like, or if they've had a full class, you guys, they may be able to sneak in as well, because schools are, as of right now, have been doing, dropping kids. So I think it's be interesting to see if guys will maintain their commitment and see what's happening out there. And I think guys at the bigger schools have been poaching. You know, are they going to call the new guys they like who've developed over the last year, or are they going to focus on, you know, their own guys? So I think definitely interesting dynamic. You know, from what I'm hearing, you know, I personally, for me, selfishly, you know, my 2019 group is a really good group. They were kind of on the younger side last year, and now with a full year, I mean, the whole summer really benefited them, especially if you're a goalie. One of our goalies who's uncommitted, I expect to have tons of interest. You know, the summer really played out well for him because he's an extremely bright kid and in minimal spots on the Ivy League schools. So he's done really well to position himself to be successful, and the rule benefited him greatly.
So you mentioned – the first thing you mentioned I find really interesting. So I think there's some expectation that there's going to be a lot of activity at the beginning of September. My expectation is that the majority of that activity is coaches finding out that kids – who had previously committed to them are not firm in their verbal commitment any longer. What has been your sense of coaches bracing for that?
I think a lot of those guys, some of the schools I've spoken to, have kind of put together their board, their top 100 kids they like. And I think that, you know, every year you've seen, again, I think last year there were 72 kids that flipped from, I think, September to signing day. And I think right now you've already seen guys, you know, change over. I think guys, hopefully can trust their relationships, but again, it's been 4 months, and you know, I'm sure, you know, every club director is going to do what's best interest of their player. We serve the kids. Obviously, it's a difficult situation because we have relationships with all these college coaches, but at the end of the day, I think that each kid is going to, you know, may not have been a great student in the beginning, but now is a better student, or didn't think he's a great test taker and now has these scores. The gray area of, you know, what's going to really happen is now there's more firm. You have more, you know, 2 years of grades is a big difference. as opposed to saying, hey, this kid was an honors kid in eighth grade. You know, it's kind of refreshing not having to speak about eighth graders anymore. So I think these kids might, you know, might change, and I could see a lot of kids flipping going through the beginning of the process.
Yeah, I find that really interesting. And another thing about this that I find really interesting is kids who had started to have conversations and maybe even received offers but had not made their decision when the rule went into place. How many kids do you get a sense that is? Is there, like, you know, I mentioned that in my estimation, half of the spots in this 2019 class in Division I are still available. Certainly there are some programs that are full. You know, a couple programs have upwards of 20 commits. Then there are a couple of programs that only have 1, 2, 3 commits. And there are some really high-profile good programs that only have 6 commits. For example, you know, John Torpy on this podcast previously talked about how High Point only has 6 commits. So there means that when this rule went into place, there was a lot of active recruiting going on. And my presumption is that there were a lot of offers out there. But I don't know that for sure. You're more dialed in on that phase of the recruitment process. What's your sense of, you know, how many offers were available but not accepted? And as a result, what level of picking up where we left off do you think we'll see?
Well, I think in the beginning, like there was, we had a couple of 19s who had pending offers and the rule changed. You know, I think you kind of help those kids out in a sense because, you know, as you get later into the winter and before the spring, you know, you kind of have to make decisions on those decisions because if longer you wait, the longer a coach doesn't think you're interested with the rule changing, it actually helped those kids because I'm sure some of them were looking at their options and waiting to see. So those kids who had those opportunities, I think it kind of benefited them to give them more time to also see what's out there. I think the kids who really kind of got impacted by it was the 20 class because guys, you know, those guys, you know, they had the early first glance of getting looked at. Some of them might be bigger, faster, stronger right now. Now in 2 years, the playing field might equal out for them, so they might not have the same opportunities they may have had as a freshman that they're not going to have as a junior now. So those are, I typically be of those reclass guys, the parents who spent the money to repeat their kids to kind of give them an advantage. I feel like that advantage has now been taken away for those kids.
That's an interesting thought. We'll come back to that in a little bit, but you, kind of along the same line, talking about the summer of development, how different was this summer with your 2019 group relative to your rising junior groups in years past?
It was really, to be honest with you, every summer I've kind of gone in, we have my list of kids who I think are kind of get done and working over 4 classes. It was kind of refreshing only getting an opportunity to really work with the 2018s. And I think this summer and the previous summer, there was a high level with the 17 and 18s of D1 coaches watching. And I saw at times, you know, there was very minimal coaches at the 20 level, more focused on the 19s and 18s. You know, some guys had finished their 19 class and wanted to start getting their early evaluations on the 20s. The others were looking to see what's still out there in the 18 and 19s, looking who they could poach. So I think it kind of made people be more firm in their decisions. And it was just, you know, a weird summer where you felt the previous summer where it was hectic. You're getting a million calls and you're sending up visits. Now it's kind of nice where you can kind of coordinate stuff with the coach and they could speak to the coaches directly. And I think that the September 1st deadline is actually going to make things complicated and really interesting. I say complicated because all these coaches preach that they want 3-sport athletes, or they want, but yet kids who play football and play soccer I think are really at a disadvantage because they can't visit. So you highlight points. Some guys may only have a few spots left. You know, let's say the coach is an actively aggressive recruiter on the first, and there's a guy with 3 spots, the first 2 accepts going to get it. That kid who is the starting quarterback of his football team is at a disadvantage, and I really think that the governing body really did those kids a disadvantage. If they were going to change the rule, they should have made it July 1st. So it's more active. So those kids had a fair shot. Or the kid who comes from California who now spends his whole summer up here and gets to play all the tournaments on the East Coast now has to arrange multiple flights up here. It really puts those kids in a disadvantage because they're not going to have the opportunity to see multiple schools or speak to multiple coaches. And I also think now, you know, in terms of the poaching aspect, you know, more of it's going to go through the coaches to the kids because now the coaches can have pretty much have a year start to build relationships with them. They really don't need the club directors to coordinate the phone calls because anybody knows you can get a kid's phone number or email directly through a kid's highlight video on YouTube or any other sites that have them. So I really think it's going to change that aspect of the sport because now these coaches have a full year to flip and speak to kids directly. And I think it's going to be more chaotic. And I also think that, you know, you mentioned Coach Torpy only has 6 committed kids. Now, I can't see those guys being that active because they're going to wait and see what's available. So I think kids will get calls on September 1st. I think some people, kids will be disappointed. Others will be really happy. Some kids may be shocked about what they get. But I also think that the way it's going to play out is it's really going to push things back till November. So we may see a flurry of commits early on in September, but I really think there'll be more so in the back end, more so it's December, once they have the November period and kids have an opportunity to visit, because those schools with fewer commits will now have more time to see who's available, and they'll have a more flurry of kids, because it was easier when kids would commit younger because you knew who had spots and where you could go. Now it's open season on everybody.
It's so fascinating, because one of the things that you're speaking to is this idea that, you know, forever recruiting had happened incrementally. This is, you know, it was a trickle. It was, you know, as a coach would see a player that he liked, he would make a move on that kid, and that kid would either commit or not. Now it's, you know, 71 programs, kind of the dam opening on a candidate pool of, say, 500 to 700 kids, maybe up to 1,000, and all of that information running through the same channels in, you know, the span of a couple days or a couple weeks. So what I'm interested in your perspective on is, what have you been telling your families to prepare for and your players to prepare for in terms of the incoming contact that will begin on Friday?
Well, the first thing I've told all my kids is to make sure, one, their voicemail box is set up. Two, make sure it says you're who you are. And a lot of these kids think it's fine to have their child voicemails from when they're, you know, fourth or fifth grade, or some kid in there. So make sure they clean up their voicemails. And just saying, hey, just be ready for it. And if you get some phone calls, you know, it could be early, it could be late, it could be during the week, just, you know, whatever it is. I also have asked all the kids to give me a list of schools that they're interested in. This way, when I touch base, because a lot of schools have been reaching out to me this week, asking for phone numbers, final information. I'm trying to get the academics, because the more information I can give these guys pre-September 1, it kind of lets them know if they're qualified or not qualified. Because I don't want to waste my kids' time or my time or the coach's time. I do a pretty good job of trying to screen and see what's an option, because doing this now 10 years, I kind of have the guidelines for what these schools all look for. So I'm just trying to get these guys as prepared and get them as much information as possible. And I'm just telling my parents, just, you know, be ready for the unexpected. I think some of the college coaches are holding their cards close to their vest. I had one coach this summer tell me, you know, had he been at the school he previously at, he would have been a September 1st phone call. Now that another school, he's ready to call that kid on a day, and I had no idea he was interested in that kid until he expressed that, because everybody's been so focused on the 18 class. So I think there's a lot of guys right now who are just getting their notes together and ready to make some phone calls, and should be interesting, and told the parents, you know, they're the guinea pigs. Be prepared for phone calls or no phone calls, and just keep your head up and keep working hard if you don't get that call.
One of the things that has been a little bit of a subtext of this whole conversation is that the class of 2017 was considered, well, first of all, the class of 2016 was historically good in terms of their production on the freshman level of D1. The 2017 class, I think, was viewed as being pretty good, similarly to 2018. The 2019 class, there's some questions as to how good the overall talent is. It maybe not quite at the level of the previous three seasons. And as a result, it's fascinating that this is happening in the same kind of window of time as they're the ones, the first implementation of this September 1st, the re-implementation of the September 1st contact period. First of all, I mean, do you have any sense of whether or not that's a shared opinion? And secondly, how do you feel like that's manifesting itself in the way that coaches are approaching this group?
Well, I also think that now you've got a couple years of now where kids have been recruited as eighth graders or ninth graders. Kids haven't panned out, so coaches aren't happy with their classes. You know, I've had coaches who've told me they've dropped kids in their class, and I've had others tell me that they took a kid, but they've told them he's not going to play. So I think some of these guys have been burned by this process. So that, you know, I think the talent is still there. I just think that they're more hesitant to pull the trigger, because a lot of these guys are saying some of their best guys they've gotten are guys later on in the process where they've saved three or four spots or they've saved money, and they're trying to not to rush, because in case, like, you know, a big fish comes along trying to pry their younger guys. I think the other thing that's interesting is, you know, you talk about money, you know, some of these schools who are the mid to lower tier D1 schools are able to get really, really good kids because they've had more money and the cost of education has been high. Now by this rule is going to do is it's going to level the playing field to schools who may have been like an ACC school or Big Ten school that may have been aggressive early and thrown money at a kid who may not have developed that soon, and now are going to have a full scholarship money waiting there. So I think those younger schools are really going to be really hurt by that, because now those kids, they may be able to get financial constrictions. They're not going to get those kids because of that. So I don't think that – I think that the 19 classes is good. I just think that these guys right now have been burned and they're trying to be patient. I mean, and also these kids have been evaluated now for 3 years. So I think a lot of these guys have watched the same kids. You know, they've kind of developed. I think people kind of – some of these kids get overanalyzed as athletes. And I think these guys have just spent now – I think it'll kind of be refreshing for the classes of 20 and 21 because there'll be new kids to watch. You know, and they're not going to be judged based on how they did their freshman year or stuff. And I think the coaches will be happier too because, again, more quality of life for them.
So as we wind down this podcast and wind down this conversation, at this point, would you say that you are happy with the outcome of the implementation of the rules? Do you, you know, knowing what you know now, are you glad that the rule change occurred?
I'm happy that it changed. I'm one of those that's in favor of it because I think, again, it protects the kids' interest a little bit. You know, a lot of these guys say, oh, they hate early recruiting college coaches, but they still do it. This actually kind of limits it. Obviously, you know, we don't know what's going to happen or if there's any, you know, deals that have been constructed outside for kids who are still getting recruited by schools. We don't know the impact of that. And we also don't know what's going to change because, you know, again, some of the rules they have there, they say it's an interpretation. And being a lawyer, you know, I make a living off of interpretations of how it's going to be. So you really don't know what's really going to happen, I think, a full year. But I'm happy. I think it makes things easier. It lets kids be kids, let kids play fall sports again. And I also do think it gives kids time to develop because a lot of parents right now, they see their younger kid, and he may be small right now, but he just needs time to grow. And they end up spending the $40,000, $50,000 to reclassify. And I'm a kid, a firm believer in that parents shouldn't spend the money. If your kid's good enough to go to an ACC school or a Big Ten school or play big-time lacrosse, your kid's able to do it. I mean, him playing down here, you know, when we were kids, my brothers and I joke, you know, we always played up. We never played down. So I think that's you're going to see the reclass stuff, I think, will definitely shake out. I see more traditional PGs coming back in effect. But I like it because it gives kids time to develop and mature-wise and hopefully it makes them feel more comfortable in their decision because, you know, what kid really knows what they want in a 13-year-old kid? I couldn't tell you I was, you know, 13 or 14, even at 20, that I'd be doing this for a living. I mean, you have no idea what path you're going to follow. I'm 31 years old and still figuring out what I want to do in certain aspects of my life. How could you expect a 13-year-old kid to not make that decision? So I'm happy it gives them, you know, 2 more years of growth as an academic and as a person, as a student, and hopefully this rule stays intact and hopefully everybody abide by the rules because that's all you want. At the end of the day, we're all in the business of helping kids and give these kids an opportunity to be the best they can be, and hopefully it works out for everybody else.
Well, that's a great summary statement, Nick. We really appreciate your time on the Inside the Lacrosse Recruiting Podcast, and we're looking forward to the next week and seeing how things unfold.
Thanks, Terry. I really appreciate you having me.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.